definitely human.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
It is the summer of 1927. Joy Dutton Cavendish and her unusual family of occult investigators have journeyed to Lake Ballaghanoor in the province of Bombay in search of a sinister cult and a possible cure for her horrifying affliction. After facing the monster that Brendel Cavendish became and escaping the clutches of inhuman denizens in the darkness beneath, our heroes succumb to their exhaustion. The journey has been long and arduous, stained by the blood of innocents, and the best they can hope for now is a moment of peace in the solitude of the jungle. But you are never truly alone in The Infinite Bad. The Ruins of Karajar, Part 8. Dust settles on the rubble and roots of the quiet jungle undergrowth in Lake Ballaghanoor, province of Bombay, India. Greta and Theo von Humboldt are buried here, deep beneath the collapsed caves, along with Brendel Cavendish and the monstrous creatures that accompanied him. Dorothy, Cornelia, and Joy are safe for now, but their minds cannot stop racing with the revelations they have just experienced. Sebastian lies on his back, unconscious, his face twitching mechanically. Joy struggles to her feet. Every sound around them is both muffled and deafeningly amplified. Every swell of birdsong, a painful slice into their senses. But she believes they are close. The city of Karajar must be here somewhere. Joy knows better than to wait for a sign. She has no choice but to forge ahead with all the practiced British stubbornness she can muster. Dorothy glances nervously up at Joy and then down at Sebastian as if seeing him for the first time.
I'm going to try to get Sebastian back on his feet again.
Okay, make a medicine check at advantage.
20.
Oh, yes.
Great, thank you.
It was just a splinter and you pull it out and it's fine. Okay, great. So you set Sebastian down and you have a little bit of time and enough of medical equipment to really get to work on him. Sebastian, you regain 1d10 hit points.
One.
Well, you tried, Dorothy.
I tried my best.
You tried, you did well. But what ails Sebastian
one.
Is deeper. Deeper than what your medical knowledge can address.
Right. Both of you must be also pretty knocked up pretty badly. Can I
yes,
help you?
Please.
Alright, I'm gonna attend to Cornelia first, because mm-hmm. she has dysentery and malaria, and is also 67 years old. Yeah. So let me
mopping her brow as you attend to her.
9.
Okay, so you heal 1d4, Cornelia.
1.
Oh, very good. Very good. I'm liking these rolls, guys.
And then Cornelia, could you maybe just, Sebastian, you know, he was out for a while. Do you think, he's obviously very confused. Do you think you could maybe just have a conversation with him while I talk with Joy? So maybe you, you know, you could maybe just, obviously it's a little overwhelming. It's an overwhelming conversation. So maybe just a little bit of distance, just so that he doesn't feel overwhelmed.
I read you loud and clear.
Okay. So they, are they a distance away that they can't hear anymore? All right. Are you okay, Joy?
I'm definitely not okay, Dorothy. When I was down near the monoliths, my stomach felt like it was turning inside out, upside down. And I definitely, definitely consumed that tea and something is within me. I feel a bit better now that I'm away from the chamber, but I'm torn up inside. I don't know what to do. I'm okay. So worried.
Okay, I think take deep breaths. It is natural and normal for you to feel ill under conditions of that level of terror. And just remember that this might still be psychosomatic. You know, that's normal.
Is that possible?
It's possible. It's definitely possible. If you think that you've drunk the tea, then, you know, your response to stress and fear will manifest.
But the doctor on the ship, before he hit his head, he said something about what I was going through. I don't think I misunderstood what he said.
It's a possibility. We don't know what we're dealing with, but worry isn't going to help.
Okay.
But let me check you out. Let me see if there is anything that I can do to help you. You do have some cuts and scrapes, and I think it's going to be okay. You've got to believe it's going to be okay, all right?
Thank you, Dorothy.
Okay, let me do what I can. 6.
Yeah. All that build up.
Okay, take 1d4, Joy.
4.
Oh, jeez. Wow. Well, it was the pep talk more than the medical attention that did it.
Yay.
Okay, so Cornelio, did you want to say something to Sebastian?
Sebastian, Theo is gone. And so is Greta. They died in the chamber. I'm so sorry.
Mrs. Cavendish, when I was a lad, when I look away far off into the distance...
I like to put a comforting hand on his shoulder and then walk back to her.
Oh.
I just bow my head.
Okay, so, I mean, Cornelia, are you going to address to the rest of the group what happened with Brendel, or are you just convinced that it's...
Nope.
Okay.
Cornelia, are you doing okay?
Perfectly fine, Dorothy. Thank you for your concern.
Cornelia, that can't have been Brendel.
It can't have been, I know.
Good.
Brendel is dead.
Yes.
Yes.
He died at sea. His body wasn't found, but he is dead.
Those bastards got him.
The sea. I agree.
the sea, the water.
All right, well, I guess best not to dwell on any of that. Do any of us have any idea where we're going next?
What can we see?
What can we see?
In front of you is more dense jungle thicket, basically, and behind you is this collapsed cave complex. Ashok led you to believe that the Lake Balaganor would be not too far beyond this, but it's not immediately visible from where you are. Make perception checks all, though.
17.
1.
5.
20.
Oh, okay. So, Sebastian, as you are scanning the surface of this jungle thicket, you suddenly become aware of two glossy black eyes gazing steadily at you from about 12 feet up. And then a low but wide rustling shakes the leaves around it. And then you become aware of a large bulk. A grey giant emerges from the undergrowth, its great trunked face and wide ears swaying gently. You have heard tales of elephants, but to see one in the flesh and in such close proximity is a stunning experience. It looks down at you placidly, Sebastian.
I look up at it placidly.
What do the rest of you want to do?
This is the most excited I've been. All adventure. Can I do...
Well, I rolled a 1. Do I even see the elephant?
It hasn't actually stepped out of the jungle. So, I mean, Sebastian can see it. But you can't, Cornelia. Yeah.
We can't either.
The rest of you, after a moment, you follow Sebastian's gaze and you can make it out, but Cornelia is distracted.
Okay. Can I do an investigation check just to see if it's a good boy?
It's a good
boy. Can you throw a stick and see if it bounds after it?
Well, I want to see if it's a good, like, elephant boy. Like, it doesn't have to be a dog. So I got a 14. Can I tell if it's a good boy?
It's a good elephant, yeah.
Oh, what a good elephant. I share my observations with the group. This is a really good elephant.
What elephant?
There's an elephant, and it's a really good elephant.
Take a good look around.
Cornelia, after a moment, you suddenly see it's like a magic.
The sly beast was hiding!
How beautiful. Can we ride it? This is a bit much!
What can we do with it?
Can I try to touch it? Like reverently, like just pat its flank.
Okay. You step forward towards it, and as soon as you touch it, you can hear this low kind of moan, the grunt that an elephant will make. And then it turns, and its tail swaying, it starts shuffling through the forest, and you can see that it's leaving behind a trail of crushed undergrowth.
I would like to propose it's not the craziest idea we've ever had to follow this elephant. Can we follow this elephant?
Elephants live in the jungle. Like, it's, you know, it's not going to lead us to the village.
It might lead us to water, which might lead us to the lake.
Yes.
And that's just me rationalising what Dorothy's already going to do.
Okay. All right. It's not the craziest idea we've ever had.
Let's follow the elephants.
Okay. So, if nothing else, it is much easier to follow the elephant's trail of crushed undergrowth than it would be to just delve into the jungle, thicket, full bore. So, you manage to follow the elephant, and it seems perfectly content to let you follow it. It doesn't stop or look back at you, but just kind of strides slowly and determinedly through the jungle. After about a half hour, you're making much quicker progress than you would have if you hadn't been following the elephant. And you arrive through the dense undergrowth, and you come finally into a clearing, at least a mile across. Wow. For the first time in days, you can see the sky clearly, and even the horizon in the distance, and the vast emptiness of it unnerves you all of a sudden. Dominating this clearing is a ruined city, a dark and looming presence against the grey sky that foretells a gathering storm. The architecture is familiar to your studies of the region, Joy, but certain aspects of it, obvious even at this distance, fill you with an unease that's difficult to explain. Domes that somehow seem too bulbous, columns and buttresses that seem superfluous, even the pattern of the paved streets seems to follow a disconcerting geometry. As you approach, you realize that you're having difficulty even placing this city temporally. It seems abandoned, and yet there is an overpowering sense that you're surrounded, even that you're intruding into a place already crowded with presence. You give in to your instinct to step lightly on the wide, mossy paving stones that line the streets underfoot, and you barely notice the first droplets of rain on your shoulders and on the backs of your hands. So you've arrived at this massive city, and indeed the elephant seems to have come here because there are these wide, shallow canals that run around the perimeter of this city that all seem to be leading towards the centre of the city, which is not yet visible to you because it's hidden by various ruined buildings that make it up.
Wow.
Wow. And there are streets and everything.
There are streets and everything, yeah.
We don't see people.
But you don't see...
I just feel a presence.
You feel like, yeah, like everyone has just gone inside suddenly, but they're still there. You have this overwhelming sense that there is someone here, there is a presence here.
Guys, I think this is the kingdom of Karajar. I've read about this.
That's where we're trying to go, right?
Yes.
So this is where
we need to be.
Are.
I found out that there might be a cure originating from here. There was a man torn apart because he was fed a special potion and he bathed in something that cured him from this potion that he drank. And as punishment, they tore him apart. Ignoring the tearing apart. I think it's great that there's a possible cure. I've been harbouring a terrible secret up until this point from you guys that I drank the tea with Angela Gresley. And back there with the monoliths, I've felt my stomach writhing, turning upside down, inside out. I fear the worst for my future.
When did you drink the tea?
When Angela Gresley had me tied to the mast.
You didn't tell me.
I didn't want to worry you, Cornelia. I couldn't worry you. I'm telling you now. That's why we've come here. I need to find a cure.
We need to find a cure. It'll be okay.
We'll find a cure. It'll be fine. Let's have a look around.
That's a great idea,
yes,
Sebastian.
Yes, we'll have a look around. Great. Everything's going to be fine.
Okay. So when we look at this city, can we identify any buildings that look that, like they're for specific purposes? Could we identify, for instance, a library or residential buildings? Can we tell them apart?
Yes. So, Joy, why don't you make a history check at advantage, because this is what you've been dedicating your studies to for the past few months.
Totally.
14.
So looking across it, you feel like, well, I guess somewhat reasonably, the residential buildings seem to be in the margins, and the more important, larger, more imposing buildings are in the center. In the very center, you assume there is the Royal Palace. It has a large cupola right in the middle and a wider, broader, flatter structure with a colonnade. You assume that is where the Prince of Karajah might have once resided. So your instinct is that if there is going to be this document or a pool itself, that's probably a good place to start.
Mm. And just before we start poking around this occupied, yet somehow not occupied city that is giving us all uneasiness, can mm-hmm. I just, I'm on 3 hit points. I would like to try to heal myself.
Okay, so it's been an hour or so since you followed the elephant. So yeah, I'll let you make another medicine check for everyone.
I did.
Just make one for everyone.
I think everybody could do with some more.
17.
All right, so why don't everyone heal 1d4 hit points? You can take a break here and chill next to the elephant while he drinks his fill.
I definitely think the elephant is helping. So I'm on 5 now.
I'm on 7.
And what is everybody's dread?
Sebastian, how many hit points did you regain again?
I got 1.
Slow and steady, Sebastian. Yes.
I'm on 85 dread.
Yeah, what's your everyone's dread?
My dread is 80. I spent most of the time unconscious.
Yeah.
My dread is 55.
Wow.
I'm practically sane.
But yeah. Dorothy's ice cold.
Right. Yeah, exactly. My dread is 135.
Wow. Okay.
Should that come down at this point or not?
No. She hasn't really
not
dealt with
rest,
what yeah, she needs to be dealing with. Okay.
That's like a decade of therapy.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you didn't gain dread from finding out about my affliction.
You've been through a lot. Maybe you're not processing that either.
Yeah. So I know that we're going to have a stern talk about this afterwards.
Yeah.
Which is why you are keeping things from me.
It's one of those, like, I'm not angry,
mother,
I'm disappointed, yeah. You know, like... I'm not dreading it, I'm disappointed.
Yeah.
You're right.
All right. So, do you want to start making your way to the centre of the city straight away?
To the colonnade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that's where we should go.
All right. So, there is a wide boulevard that seems to lead straight through the centre of the city towards the what you assume is the Royal Palace. And as you start walking down it, you see that about 100 feet ahead, there is some sort of pile in the middle of the road that disturbs this otherwise completely clear, wide avenue. As you approach it, you notice it's a strange sight. The first thing that occurs to your frayed minds is that this seems like a pile of corpses, gangly and strewn across the width of this ancient avenue. But as you approach it, you realize that these are simply empty clothes. Hundreds of trousers, coats, boots and gloves. You struggle to parse the meaning of this. You start at the sight of movement among the pile, and then you begin to make out dozens of small shapes sifting through the clothes. Indian macaques, it seems, picking at the discarded effects with deft fingers, occasionally bringing their hands to their mouths as they regard you with deep, black, impassive eyes.
I want to check the clothes to see if they're ripped in any way, because Brendel's clothes were literally ripped. He ripped out of them, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they basically disintegrated off him.
Yeah, I'd like to see if the clothing is ripped off, and then we'll know if the whole city is turned into hand people.
That'd be good to know.
Mm. Yes.
Good to know.
So you're approaching the clothes.
I want to inspect the clothes to see if they've been ripped off.
I would also like to inspect the clothes to see if they're Western or whether they're Indian, because it sounded like you didn't mention that it didn't seem to be Indian what you just said, so I'd like to do a bit of investigation.
Okay, so approaching the clothes, as you do so, the monkeys look at you and their brows furrow, and they seem to get a little bit upset that you're approaching them. And a couple of them start screaming at you.
I wave my hands.
Make an intimidate check.
12.
Okay. They scatter.
Yeah,
they do.
Nice one.
Okay, so now all of you are able to approach the pile of clothing unmolested. Joy, you can see that these clothes are perfectly intact. They don't seem to have been, I mean, they seem to have been removed. Bits of them are a little bit threadbare and torn, perhaps, but certainly not a violent kind of explosion or anything like that. Dorothy, yeah, these clothes are, make an intelligence check.
17.
Okay, so you can discern a few things from them. Firstly, they're all male clothes. Secondly, they mostly seem to be military clothes. And as you start to go through them, you realize that they are all from, well, from a variety of countries. But you see that many of them have personal effects within them, including passports and some more than a few wallets.
What sort of military, sorry? Do I have a sense for whether it's a Western military uniform?
Yeah, so they seem to be countries from ranging from New Zealand to Australia to Britain to Russia to Japan. So not all Western.
Not all Commonwealth either.
Not all Commonwealth either, yeah.
How odd. Okay, yes, let's...
Yeah, I want to rifle through. Let's take a look at what
get some names.
We can see.
Yeah.
And some, like the passports, like the dates on the passports maybe?
Yes.
So the dates and the passports seem to, as you start reading through them and you really start kind of pouring through the information that's available, you start to make out and piece together that the dates on the passports seem to be from a range of dates and years ranging back to the end of the 19th century. And that many of these military officers seem to have been involved in Antarctic expeditions. In fact, that seems to be one of the things that's tying most of them together.
So I can see that from a stamp on their passport?
You can piece together the fact that, yeah, many of them seem to have gone to, like, Chile or Cape Town or Southern Australia. And it starts to hint at that.
How many of these are there? Sorry.
Maybe it's about 100 pairs of clothes, or, like, sets of clothing. There's a lot of clothing 100. Here.
Wow.
And from all nationalities?
From all, yeah, a whole
but
bunch.
But military?
Mostly military, not all military.
Okay,
mostly
let me military. Look at the ones that are not military then.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same kind of profile. There seem to be male sets of clothing with passports that seem to bear travel stamps that point southwards towards the Antarctic Circle.
It's not crazy that militaries would be wanting to explore the Antarctic and have the resources to do so more than private citizens. So I guess if that's what ties them together, it would make sense that most of them are military.
They wouldn't be mixed up like this. We'd find a whole load of either Commonwealth countries or like German ones or Dutch ones.
Yeah.
If these are all mixed up.
Mm-hmm.
Are they, what sort of state of decay are they in?
I mean, they're all worn, but they're not rotting, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, I mean, if you leave clothes outside for like a year, they're not going to be intact anymore.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, they've clearly been recently left here. And this is a clear sign that something has been here in the past week. Even, I mean, the monkeys are evident, like, if they had been here for more than a week, then clothes wouldn't be here because of things like the monkeys.
Yeah, okay.
How are they arranged in the road?
It looks like just a pile. Like, whoever wore these clothes was stripped down and all the clothes are just left here. And then the people were taken somewhere else.
I want to start investigating inside one of the properties. Is there any doorways or anything kind of close by?
Yeah, there is very small stone houses that you can see around. And you can see that there's kind of iconography there that is reminiscent of what you saw in the cave paintings and what you've been seeing in the chapel. But this time it's everywhere. It's on every surface of every building. You can see these faces staring back at you. That might be what, on closer inspection, what gave you this sense of there is presence here everywhere, because every surface seems to bear these faces on it.
There's nothing inside the houses in terms of was it liniments, oils, like things like that, anything?
Most of the houses seem pretty empty.
Okay.
Overgrown.
I mean, should we head towards the palace?
Yeah, I'd like to head towards the palace, but I'd like to get my firearm out. Like, having seen evidence of recent human activity.
Okay, so as you start heading up towards the palace, you can see that the colonnade that is presented right in front of you actually leads out into a central courtyard So the palace complex is actually a square, an empty square, though. And as you head up these steps, you realize that you're going to come into a massive courtyard.
I don't feel comfortable about just like walking into a huge courtyard. I want to do a perception check to
see. And I think I'm definitely walking like quiet. Like I'm quite unnerved. So yeah, I've got my gun out and I'm walking quietly.
Okay. So all make perception checks and all make stealth checks, please.
13.
20.
Nice. 17.
6.
Wow. Okay, so Dorothy, but especially you, Joy, your caginess pays off. And indeed, as you approach the palace, you can start to hear definitely voices. Relatively low at the moment, but you can definitely hear voices. And there's many, many voices.
Okay, I'm going to motion back towards Cornelia and Sebastian, like, to be quiet. Like, I've got my hand to my lips.
Yeah, I'm doing a sign up with my hands, like, stop.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so you've all stopped now.
Are they all male voices?
You can't really make that out.
Can we kind of get a sense for what language they're speaking?
Can't really make that out either.
Okay.
I want to just like peek over the top of the stairs to see what I can see.
Yeah, so let's go real stealthy.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Real stealthy. We'll make stealth checks.
Yes.
12.
12.
11.
6.
Okay. So you start creeping your way up the stairs, and as you get to the top, you realize that there is this massive central courtyard, and filling it, there are hundreds of people in front of you. After spending so long in relative isolation, your first instinct is to be relieved at the sight of so many human beings. However, this feeling quickly dissipates as you begin to realize their purpose. All of them are dressed in long, shapeless brown frocks, which might be buttoned up at the front, but are now hanging loosely open, exposing their naked bodies beneath. They are organized in what appears to be a precise pattern, resembling several broken segments of three concentric circles, all focused around one point, a circular black pool of water, 15 feet in diameter, whose surface is perfectly glassy and still. The only sound you can hear is the drone of the wind as it gathers, and now they've stopped speaking, and the sound of the rain on the city's ancient stones fills the air. Then a figure, one of several to be wearing a hood in addition to the robes, turns, and he seems to have noticed you. He steps towards you, lowering his hood. He is pudgy and would otherwise cut a comical figure if his identity did not leave you in such horrified upset. This is Lord Talbot, your jovial host in Egypt, and the man who sent you down the Nile in search of the tomb of Rens Nefis.
What, and now he's walking nakedly towards us?
Indeed.
Swinging in the wind.
A grim smile plays upon Joy's lips as she reflects on the absurdity of stuffy old Lord Talbot appearing so nonchalant in his strange ceremonial robes. Of course, it makes a kind of sense, she thinks, that this amateur Egyptologist would be involved in the sinister cult of Angela Gresley. For how long have the forces of evil manipulated and maneuvered our heroes? Is this very confrontation a part of their nefarious plan? Joy looks at Lord Talbot's smug, self-satisfied expression and realizes that the only thing keeping her on her feet is the primal need to wipe that smile off of his face. You've been listening to The Ruins of Carajar, written by Giorgio Mariani and produced and edited by David Knight and Tom Dalling, with music by Jonathan Day. Starring Eleanor Kohler as Dorothy Taylor, Maximilian John as Cornelia Cavendish, David Knight as Sebastian St. Battenberg, and Charlie May as Joy Dutton Cavendish. I am Giorgio Mariani, Game Master. You can follow us on Twitter at The Infinite Bad and support the production of this series on Patreon. That's patreon.com/definitelyhuman. The Infinite Bad is a Definitely Human production.